Welcome to the Gold Newsletter Podcast, your bank of knowledge of investment, economics, and geopolitics. Go to goldnewsletter.com for our publications and archives.
This is the Gold Newsletter Podcast. Fergus Hodgson, your host, joined by Brian London. We are always pleased to be with you, and we have a repeat guest, a man of great authority among gold bugs. He is Ron Stifley, and he is a fund manager, partner of Incrementum AG, and he's responsible for portfolio or research and portfolio management, and he's also the author of In God We Trust. His latest book out is The Zero Interest Trap. So we will share links to his materials on goldnewsletter.com/podcast. Otherwise, his website is incrementum.li/en for English, because I assume it's in German.
Yeah.
Ronnie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Always a pleasure.
Well, one of the reasons why you have respect in the field is this annual report, In Gold We Trust. And I was just looking at last year's report, which came out in May. Where is it here? Came out, you know, almost a year ago. As you said before, you're in the meat right now of getting the next one prepared. What's the status?
I'm catching kind of my yearly insomnia, because right now is really the time of the year when we work together quite a lot to establish, you know, the core thesis, the leitmotif of the report. We try to write a little bit less than last year, because last year's report was 340 pages, but I think we will fail again, because there's just so much stuff going on, and we already wrote some fantastic chapters about, you know, topics like technology in mining, also the whole ESG topic that is becoming more important for the mining space.
Yes.
And of course, we're going to discuss central bank action, the technical analysis of the market, the status quo relative to other asset classes, relative to other currencies. So there's quite a lot to write. And it is intense, but I thoroughly enjoy this time of the year, because we're just focusing on, you know, crunching the numbers, researching different topics. And that's what I love.
Well, gives me a smile, because I was looking at the compact version, which has 96 pages, and thinking, man, this is one intense report. But I forgot there were 300 pages in the real deal. How many people get through all this? That's intense.
Well, it's actually, we said, okay, if you really want to know something about gold, you have to, you know, take a day off or a weekend off and just read it. And that's basically all you need to know about gold and the market. And it is not, you know, when you try to understand gold, and I think somebody made the joke that there's only two people in the whole world that understand the price of gold. They both work for the Bank of England, and they both disagree. So I wouldn't say that I 100% understand the price of gold. But what I learned over the last 13 years is clearly that there are so many different factors influencing the price of gold, like opportunity costs, real interest rate developments, of course, equity markets, recession risks, inflation risks. So actually, if you have a view on gold, you also have a view on many other asset classes. So that's the real fascination about it. And that's what makes it quite a challenge every year to write this report.
Ronnie, Brian here. I know you were being a little bit facetious by saying all you need to do is read this book for the whole year, because things do change throughout the course of the year. But that said, the overwhelming kind of the mega trends that are driving gold are pretty much set in stone right now. And I think they really are what you address in at least the title of your book, the zero interest rate trap, these 5,000 year lows in interest rates, and what that holds for real rates going forward. You know, it's such rich fertilizer for the gold market, and such a powerful undercurrent for gold, no matter what else is going on in the world. I mean, don't you feel like it's for years to come, we're going to be stuck in these low interest rates, and that it's going to be a very powerfully bullish undercurrent for the precious metals?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's no coincidence that the name of our book is The Zero Interest Trap. We just published it in English. It was a huge bestseller in the German-speaking world, and now we're working on other translations. And it basically, it's not about only about gold or macro. It's also about, you know, the consequences of this interest rate trap for our society. Because actually, you know, this zombification, but also many trends that we are seeing in our everyday life, yeah, in the media, in politics, can be basically derived from our monetary system and interest rates. So for us, it's been important in this book to not only show the consequences for, you know, your money, your finances, but also the rather dramatic consequences for our society. Because, you know, if you mess with interest rates, you also mess with the well-being of our society and of our capital structure. But you know, as I've said, I've had a conversation yesterday with an institutional player, and he tried to challenge me regarding gold. And he said, you know, it doesn't pay any interest. And I said, yeah, but what does pay any interest nowadays? So I think this argument doesn't really work too well anymore. And I asked him, you know, do you think that the euro will be around in 10 years? And he was kind of irritated, I would say. And he said, yeah, I don't know. And then I asked him, do you think that the euro in 10 years from now will have a higher or a lower purchasing power? And he said, yeah, probably, if he's still around, probably a lower purchasing power. And I said, okay, that's already one case for gold.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if there would be only one number or one driver for the price of gold, I think it would be the direction of real interest rates. That's really one of the most powerful indicators for gold. And I just cannot see, due to the whole debt situation, that we will go back to 4 or 5% positive real rates. I just don't see it, something like in the 1980s and 1990s, that we have basically positive real rates all over the globe at 3 or 4% plus. This would be a real headwind for the price of gold, but I just don't see that in the next couple of years.
You know, touching on that, Ronnie, one of the ways that I've been putting it in my newsletter, in gold newsletter, in my presentations, is that debts, or sovereign debts, are so large right now, especially in the US, that the dollar has to be depreciated more quickly than, or at a faster rate than, the inflation rate or the debt service rate on that debt. Otherwise, the implications for the debt service costs are just, you know, budget crushing. So that's one of the reasons, if not the primary reason, why the Fed is so intent. You know, other than the fact that central bankers just abhor deflation, and they've been raised from, you know, from their mother's womb to abhor deflation and do anything to avoid it. Another reason why they want to really spark inflation is because that's essentially depreciation of the currency. And they know that they have to do that because of the size of the debt. And the rate of inflation has to exceed whatever the prevailing interest rate is on the debt. Otherwise, the budget just gets drowned.
Absolutely. I mean, inflation, I think, is probably the still one of the most contrarian things when you talk to people, let's say, outside of the gold industry. But if you talk to institutional investors and say, for me, inflation, rising inflation is a real risk that we're facing over the longer term. And everybody says, no, inflation is not the real problem. It's rather deflation. But we should not forget, food inflation in the US has just jumped to a 5-year high. Gasoline prices, till a couple of weeks ago, were rising, and in some states they were above $3 for the first time in 6 years. So, you know, this, alongside with rising food costs, is definitely a red flag for consumer discretionary stocks. On the other hand, we are seeing the beginning of the year, the whole geopolitical tensions kind of starting to increase. Now we're seeing the whole corona crisis. Mm-hmm. So from my point of view, we don't have the big inflation threat yet. But let's not forget, based on the Austrian School of Economics, and Mary Rothbard wrote brilliantly about that. He said, First, there's monetary inflation. We've had that. Then there is asset inflation. We've got that. We've got it in equity markets. We've got it in the art market. We've got it in real estate market. And we've got it in the bond markets. And only the third stage is consumer price inflation. And I think we're at the beginning of this third stage. And actually, this is exactly what central bankers and politicians want to achieve. They want to have higher inflation. They want to let inflation targets to be increased. And now from a capital markets perspective, we know that there are currently like 15 trillion of bonds trading at negative yields. So this is a guaranteed loss. And we have seen all those crazy developments like the Austrian century bond that actually looked like a dot-com or like a FANG stock. It was just a huge move that nobody would have expected. But what is the biggest pain trade for those negative yielding bonds? It is rising inflation. So if inflation might become a concern, where will this money go to? Will it go to equities, perhaps? Will it go to real estate? Not so sure, but it will definitely go into the gold market. So I think once inflation becomes a concern, I think this will really be the big driver for the price of gold. And now, just a second, what might be the trigger for inflation? Because everybody would say, yeah, but you know, you guys in the gold industry always forecast rising inflation. But with what is really going to be the trigger? From my point of view, it is those, let's say, monetary wet dreams like MMT, helicopter money, QE for the people, whatever you want to call it, and fiscal stimulus. And most central bankers said, okay, we've done our job. We went into uncharted territories. But now it's the job of politicians to actually jump in and do like huge fiscal stimulus, huge infrastructure programs. This might really be the trigger for rising inflation. So that's my kind of core thesis for the next couple of quarters.
The Gold Newsletter podcast is proudly sponsored by the Discovery Group of Exploration and Development Companies. To learn more about our exceptional track record and exciting future, visit discoverygroup.ca.
Hello, listeners. This is our weekly interview with the Discovery Group, where we speak with one of the Discovery Group companies. As you all know, the Discovery Group is our proud sponsor. I am Daniel Duarte, editor of this podcast, and today I have the pleasure of having with me Stephen Swaran, President and CEO of K2 Gold Corporation, a junior resource company focused on gold exploration in California, the Yukon, and Alaska. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
So it's been a while since you were last on the show, in October, I believe. Why don't you give us a brief recap of the firm's projects and some highlights of 2019?
Sure. 2019 was a pivotal year for K2. We decided to refocus our exploration from northern climates. We did some limited amount of work in Yukon at the Wells property, and we believe that the Wells property still has a lot of potential, but we refocused to California. And by the end of last year, we'd already done phase one of our exploration on the Mojave property. And we've taken, I would say, in excess now of 1,000 rock samples. And we are continuing to do an extended soil survey. And we're in the middle of doing infraspectral survey from satellite work.
In January, you released an overview of your exploration programs for 2020. What will be your focus?
Our focus this year is going to be definitely California. We're going to spend a limited amount of work in the Yukon, but we haven't released any results yet from our Californian program. I expect that they will be in line with previous work that was done by BHP and Newmont in the past. And if I could just reiterate the reasons why we're there is that the property was relinquished by Silver Standard a year ago. We picked it up based on the fact that there's known mineralization on the property, and we're going to try and go into maybe reviewing the potential of a drill program going forward. We have the right to drill from a helicopter, but we're looking at the possibility of maybe doing a road access drill program. And that would be a little bit more extensive than the 7 holes that were allowed from the heliborne. But we're reviewing all of our options. The property itself is 5,000 hectares, and we just staked some more ground around the property, which will be announced shortly. We think the property has some strong merits. However, it is in California, and it's not really the geology that is the issue for us. It's because if this was in Nevada, it would have been probably mined out by now, or at least done a huge amount of exploration done on the property. This is California, where it's always slightly more challenging with the regulatory situation. But we believe under the Donald Trump regime, where he's, I feel like, streamlined the BLM processes now, we think we have a good possibility of being able to execute a drill program. And this drill program would start in probably later this year.
Finally, given the recent breakout in gold prices past the 1600 barrier, how is K2 positioned to benefit from this trend? Is this trend resulting from geopolitics, fear, greed? What is your take?
Yeah, I think we still have a tight structure. Insiders own a large percentage of the stock, close to 18%, we believe. And I think with the gold price being as strong as it is and the Discovery Group being as high profile as they are within local circles, I think we're well positioned once the results of the current exploration program, rock sampling, geophysics, and the infrastructural study become announced. I think we'll be in a strong position going forward where people say, yes, these guys are giving this property of merit a good crack. And I think we're probably well positioned to be able to forward the exploration to the drilling stage sooner than later. But everything has its challenges down there. And with the gold price at 1600, it makes raising money so much easier for us than in a depressed, high-value gold environment.
Well, Stephen, anything else you would like to share with our listeners? When can they expect to hear news from you again?
Within the month, we'll have news on the property. As I say, we decided not to release any news until we've done the whole exploration program. And the guys in the field will be coming back to Vancouver and wherever they come from, probably in about 2 weeks' time. So expect within probably the end of 30 days, we'll be having some news with regard to our exploration program.
Perfect. Stephen, thank you so much for your time today and for updating us on K2 Gold Corp and its opportunities.
Oh, thank you very much for letting me speak.
Well, that's a great point. The whole argument that we've had this massive amounts of quantitative easing, tremendous, unprecedented lows on interest rates, and yet we've never gotten the retail price inflation that everybody kind of feared. And it was all steered into asset price inflation. It was kind of corralled within Wall Street. But do you think that governments are going to switch gears, as it were, and switch more toward fiscal stimulation at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't go to the casino. I feel comfortable enough investing in the mining space and in junior miners. But if I would make really one big bet, it is gonna be that if there's gonna be some sort of a crisis, recession risks, equity markets in a correction, there is no doubt about central bankers stepping in. I mean, the most recent example, what did the People's Bank of China when the whole coronavirus thing got bigger and bigger?
Yeah.
They opened the monetary floodgates. And the Federal Reserve also said, okay, if it's going to have an impact, of course we're going to ease. So I think it would be naive to say that in the next crisis, central bankers won't do anything. But with lowering rates and more QE, it won't be enough because there's this declining marginal utility. So we have to see fiscal stimulus, and we have to see, and this is really something that for me, like 2 years ago, it was basically really something well, most people would say that's a pretty weird concept. But nowadays, it is, you know, all the big banks. I just read a report by Deutsche Bank and another report by Ray Dalio and by BlackRock. And they all said, okay, whatever you want to call it, but some sort of MMT or QE for the people will and should be implemented. So this is going to come. And Christine Lagarde a couple of weeks ago said, we're considering paying money directly onto individuals' bank accounts. Now, what do you think will most people over here in the Eurozone, but I think it's going to be the same in the US, what will they do if they get like 1,000 euros or 1,000 US dollars on their account every month? Will they buy gold, mining stocks? Will they pay down their debt? Or will they go and buy, you know, another flat screen TV and just spend it?
Yeah.
So, of course, there will be a consequence for the economy, but it's going to be very, very short-lived, and people will get used to that and will probably at some point say, okay, but 1,000 euros is not enough. We need more. At some point, inflation might really pick up.
You know, if anyone's been in these markets as long as you and I have, we've seen these cycles come and go. And I remember back in the early 2000s when China's growth was just supercharged. And we were in kind of a commodity super cycle back then. And people were saying, you know, buy the periodic table. And just the last couple of weeks, I've seen that phrase come back from one or two analysts, really in reaction to what China's doing because of the coronavirus. And just, as you say, opening up the monetary floodgates and the stimulus programs, and that coming out of this coronavirus, not really a scare, but really a very significant impact on China's economy and the global economy, that they're going to do that to, you know, an even greater scale than ever before. And that, yeah, by the periodic table, it's going to be commodity super cycle. And I think for most among any of the commodities, we're talking about gold and silver being the greatest beneficiaries.
Yeah, I mean, for gold, I would say I'm extremely optimistic, and we could observe in the last couple of weeks. Well, first of all, gold in euro terms is trading at new all-time highs. Gold in many other currencies is also trading at all-time highs. In dollar terms, you know, we've seen a pretty big rally in the US dollar the last couple of weeks, but gold was holding up really, really well. So I think there's lots of really deep pockets kind of waiting on the sidelines, and they're just buying every dip. So we're in a bull market. We actually called that already last year in Gold We Trust report. I think we've been really spot on with that call. When it comes to the next stages, normally it would be silver that should outperform. We haven't really seen that yet. And the next stage, based on our model, would be the commodity space. Now, we actually have been pretty bullish the energy space starting into the new year. We didn't see, of course, the coronavirus impacting the markets, especially also not only the energy markets, but also the copper market. But just one number for energy stocks. There is so much out of favor. They're having like a 5% yield at the moment, a double-digit payout growth. And in relation to the total US stock market capitalization, it is 4% at the moment. This is close to its record low in the year 1998, when oil was trading at $11 per barrel. So I think for the longer term, the energy space, the commodity space is really interesting, but I think it might be a bit too early. And we have been, I'm very honest about that, we have been too early on that call, but I think it's going to materialize sooner or later. But yeah, perhaps it might take a bit longer than expected. And then we should not forget what's basically the other side of the trade. If you're bullish commodities, that also implies that you're somewhat bearish the US dollar. And I think at the moment, I don't see DXY going above 100. And I think Donald Trump wants and needs a weaker dollar. But on the other hand, what's really the alternative? The Swiss franc, which is important for us, has been pretty strong. The Japanese yen has been strong. But the Canadian dollar, the loonie, looks weak. The Australian dollar looks very weak. The euro looks extremely weak. So I think still the US dollar might be one of the cleanest dirty shirts, and that might change as well. But for the time being, I'm not that bearish the US dollar yet.
Well, that's certainly interesting that you're bullish on energy at this point. And I agree, the dollar has a ceiling to it around 100. And the Trump administration, whether they will actually overtly act to stop that or not, they can talk it down from that level. And they're really mercantilist in their economic views. And they'll do anything to keep the dollar from gaining significant strength. So I think the market realizes that. So it does have a ceiling to it at this point. But, you know, like you, I've been really impressed with what gold's done this year, in that the underlying uptrend was kind of interrupted by these two exogenous events, the dust up with Iran and then the coronavirus. And gold rallied on both sets of events and then settled down or corrected after each, or after that initial spike upward. But in neither case did it lose all of its gains. So that underlying uptrend was still intact. And I've just really been impressed with that. Now, silver has not yet responded, because I don't think that uptrend has been consistent enough to get the speculators in there and using, you know, the optionality of silver to any great degree. But what do you think about that? Do you think the silver and really the mining stocks so far this year, their lack of response or providing leverage to gold, is that a bearish sign, a significant bearish sign for you?
No, I think it's just a sign that we're very, very early on in this party. And I think, you know, guys like us, we're already there, and perhaps the music gets going and people have one or two beers, but we're far away from, you know, the party really taking off and going crazy. And I know many, many institutional players, actually, they really got interested in gold again in Q4 2018. Let's remember, this was really a weak quarter for basically every asset class. Stocks had their worst performance in December, the worst performance since the Great Depression. And this was also the time when the Federal Reserve started their big monetary U-turn. Now, gold was up, I think, 7 or 8% in Q4 2018. And back then, gold reappeared on the radar screens of many institutional players, wealth managers, high net worth individuals. Now, at the moment, there's very, very, successful money managers and traders like Ray Dalio and Paul Tudor Jones, Sam Sell, that said, okay, gold is one of their highest convictions in the last couple of years. But if you look at, for example, on Bloomberg, the analyst ratings for the next couple of years by the big Wall Street banks, basically everybody says that gold will go sideways the next couple of years. So we don't see any big optimism. Nobody really trusts this rally yet. So at one point, there will be, like we've seen it in 2011, the big Wall Street banks saying, okay, gold will go 50% up from here. There will be the point in time when everybody is going to be really, really bullish, when gold will be on the front pages, on the cover pages of magazines again. But we're not there yet. So I think as soon as this party really gets going, we will see silver outperforming gold. I think for the mining stocks in general, let's say that the GDX, for example, it didn't really come down. So, I mean, at the beginning of this rally, say May 2019, it was trading at 20. Then it went up almost to 30. Now it's trading at 28, and it's kind of consolidating and already making higher lows again. So I think this is a wonderful setup. We have seen quite a lot of creative destruction in the sector. We have seen some really good M&A deals. I think the companies really learned their lessons. So that makes me really confident. And at some point, I think it will be the time when the silver miners, the junior explorers, when they're really going to pick up momentum. But we're not there yet. Yeah, we just have to be patient. And I spoke at a couple of gold conferences in fall 2019, and people were, you know, really negative. And I said, guys, don't be too greedy. Gold is up 19% in dollar terms. It is up 20% in euro terms. So that has been a really good year. So we shouldn't get too greedy. So I think my call that we're in a bull market and probably like in the first innings of the bull market, this is still valid, and we have to ride this bull market.
Well, looking more immediately for this year, it looks like the markets, as far as the Fed funds futures rates, are expecting and are predicting at least one and perhaps two Fed rate cuts this year. My view on that is that it doesn't really matter. You can't look at that and say, well, what would cause that? What's going to cause the Fed to cut is the stock market at some point demanding another rate cut because they need it, they want it, and they need more cowbell, as it were, and that the Fed will make up some rationale or reason to justify it. But when the stock market says they want another rate cut, they're going to get it. And so it's only a matter of time. What do you think about that? Do you think the Fed's going to cut again for some reason this year? And could that be what the gold market needs to get back on the rally train, as it were?
Yeah, well, I don't think that this was really only a mid-cycle adjustment. We always said that we have seen the end of this of this rate hike cycle, and the only way is down from now on. I think it is it pretty obvious, and I think when Jay Powell got into his job, I thought, okay, he might be some sort of different, but now I think he's just, yeah, basically continuing the same policies like Janet Yellen and Ben Bernanke. So as soon as the S&P is down 3 or 4%, he's probably getting nervous and wants to lower rates again. And I think when it comes to the stock market, of course, it looks very, very strong at the moment. But we shouldn't forget, Dave Rosenberg always quotes the strategist Bob Farrell, and his rule number 7 was, markets are strongest when they are broad and weakest when they narrow to a handful of blue chip names. And I think what the press doesn't tell you is how narrowly based this bull market has become. So the 5 largest stocks, Apple, Alphabet, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and Amazon, now comprise nearly 1/5 of the entire S&P 500 market cap. So this is the highest concentration since the dot-com bubble peak of 2000. And we have to remember that these stocks can have quite a lot of influence on the way down, and probably, yeah, the same influence that they have on the way up. So I think once this really reverses, it will be extremely powerful. At the moment, you know, the stock market is basically shaking off every risk that we're seeing. I'm not so sure about the whole coronavirus. It is often compared to SARS, which sliced 2 percentage points off Chinese growth in 2003. But we shouldn't forget that back then, in 2003, the Chinese economy was 9% of the world GDP, and now it is 19% of world GDP. So it will have an impact, especially on, you know, all those luxury brands and also on tourism. So the big driver for many tourist destinations over here in Europe were Chinese tourists. And I think we shouldn't underestimate the consequences of this virus, although I have to say, you know, from a scientific point of view, there's no way that I or everybody else who hasn't really studied it can make a prediction how it's going to develop. But I think the markets, the equity markets especially, they are a bit too confident that this is basically already over.
Yeah, and that may be just the excuse that the Fed needs at some point to cut rates.
Yeah. I mean, somebody just tweeted the job of central bankers is printing money and business has been pretty good the last couple of quarters. And, you know, just have a look at the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. This is, although, of course, it is not QE, I would say, okay, they really get rolling again. So they're preparing for something really big. Yeah, we'll see how it's going to develop. But I think in this whole environment where we're seeing some sort of a peak in confidence and in trust in central bankers, perhaps this might really be the biggest bubble out there, this trust and confidence in the ability of central bankers to basically solve every problem with their printing presses. I don't think that they're gonna help us in the next crisis.
Right, we better cut it off there. We've gone over the half hour, but we've been speaking with Ronnie Steffoli. His website is incrementum.li/en, and he's the publisher of In Gold We Trust Report, which I guess is its own website, ingoldwetrust.report. Now, I see last year's edition came out in May. Do you have a deadline for this one?
27th of May is the big date. It will be published in English, in German, and also in Mandarin. You can download it for free on our webpage in the extended version, the triple X version, as we call it, but also in a compact version.
Great. And he's also the author of The Austrian School for Investors and The Zero Interest Rate Trap. All these links will be on the Gold Newsletter website. Ronnie, a privilege to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, gentlemen.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Bye-bye.